Springer Mountain Farms, the purest, best-tasting chicken available. Visit SpringerMTN.com and join the flock for cooking tips, coupons, and great information. Springer Mountain Farms, simply superior chicken. Always great care and great taste.
From the station that made country music famous, 650 AM WSM, this is a Coffee, Country, and Cody podcast.
Hi, it's Charlie Maddison. In this episode, we sit down with John Paul White. This was recorded at the Country Music Hall of Fame, Monday, April the 22nd of 2019. John Paul's new album, The Hurting Kind, had been out for a couple of weeks. He was getting set to make his solo debut on the stage of the Grand Ole Opry in June. A lot to talk about with John Paul White. Enjoy our Coffee, Country, and Cody podcast.
John Paul White, The Hurting Kind, is a new album. Wherever you buy or download music is available, has been for a couple of weeks. He is live on Coffee, Country, and Cody, and for the first time in the Country Music Hall of Fame?
Yes. How is that possible?
I do not know.
I've been to the old one that was over on Music Row, yeah. And I think you could just kind of turn around and you'd seen it all. This is daunting.
And it's doubled in size since this design, since its origins on this location.
Well, this is still the only part I've seen where we sit right now.
So. Well, this is a great exhibit, and people watching on Heartland Television, the Judd's exhibit, Dream Chasers exhibit. As a matter of fact, you have very young, 26-year-old Naomi Judd and her daughters, Winona, 8, and Ashley, 4. That is right over your shoulder as people are watching you. There's a picture of them. And this exhibit has been home to Alan Jackson's 25th anniversary celebration.
Wow.
Shania has been in here, Zach Brown, Randy Bachman, the Gretsch guitar exhibit.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
Trisha Yearwood, song Remembers When, and they always give them titles, like in this case, Dream Chasers.
And me.
And you. and your guitar and your new album and Leanne Womack and Bobby Braddock and Bill Anderson.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious, tell me more about this album came together and these
that
people.
That makes it feel a little more legit when you mention Bobby Braddock and Leanne and Whisperin' Bill Anderson. When I set out to write this record, I knew that I was going to end up making a record that I'd been looking for, which was something that harkened from the records that my dad beat into me when I was a kid, like Jim Reeves and Orbison and Patsy Cline and those countrypolitan things, the Chet, Bill Porter, Fred Foster produced records. So I knew I wanted it to sound like that but have my own sensibilities. So I thought, well, I have a major publisher with a big Rolodex. Let's see who will be willing to write with me, and let's talk to the greats. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, they all said yes. So there's a couple songs on there with Whisperin' Bill Anderson, and then that one with Leanne is with the great Bobby Braddock. So once they said yes and we sat down and wrote some songs, I felt, I don't know if validated was the right word, but they all gave me the thumbs up that you're on the right track. And so the rest of the songs just fell out pretty fast.
Another name that comes to mind, you sang at the funeral service of Songwriter Hall of Famer Whitey Schaefer.
Yeah.
And actually, didn't you share the story that the last song Whitey wrote was a co-write that two of you did after years of not writing?
That's
Give
right.
the backstory on how Tracy, his wife, brought the two of you together.
Tracy, bless her heart, was a fan and came to a show, actually, that I did here. I said I've never been here. I sort of have. I've been in the little theater.
The Ford Theater.
I did a theater show where I did a back and forth with Bob Boylan from NPR, and we were talking about songs that changed our life. Well, she was there, and she came up, and she said, "Do you know Whitey Schaefer?" And I said, "Well, I know of Whitey Schaefer." She said, "Well, that's my husband. Would you be interested in writing with him?" And I said, "If he's interested at all, I would die." And she said, "Well, let me see what I can do, because he hasn't written in a long time." Fast forward, she calls me up and says, "All right, he's into it if you want to come." And I said, "Well, of course I do." And she said, "You know, this is a big deal." And I said, "Yeah, it's a big deal for me." And she's like, "No, the last person that called and tried to write a song with him was Loretta Lynn, and he turned her down." So I was already terrified before I ever got there. And it was everything I wanted it to be. I got to sit at his knee and hear stories about Merle, and got to tell him about I Wonder Do You Think of Me by Keith Whitley. I sat in the front of a tour bus with a bus driver and cried because we were both so lonely for home. And he just, you know, getting to share that with him, it didn't matter if we wrote a song or not.
Yeah.
And it turns out we did, and it's a song I dearly love, and I got to sing it there.
Well, we actually played Keith's version a little earlier this morning for a contest giveaway to this 30th anniversary, the memorial 30th anniversary of his passing, that I'll be hosting with Lori and Jesse Keith on May the 9th. Ooh. And the fact that that song was the first single, it was his third album, it was the first posthumous release,
That's
single
right.
release, because he'd already had a couple of number ones on that album.
Which made it so much heavier.
And absolutely, it did.
It's
and then
gorgeous.
The fact that both Mark Chestnut and Travis Tritt would go on to have singles of songs that were on that album that were
That's
never
right.
singles for
Brother
Keith.
Jukebox, yeah.
Yeah. And Paul Kraft, who's another songwriter Hall of Famer, who wrote Brother Jukebox. I mean, so many connections.
Still, that record's perfect. And Whitey wrote that song by himself.
Yeah.
It's so intricate.
Yeah.
It's almost a jazz song. There's the chord changes are so complex and but perfect.
And what was the name of the title of the song that the two of you wrote when you finally got
I'm
it?
I'm Never Gonna Fall in Love Again. But we wrote it as a positive song. Like, you know, once I've loved like this, why would I bother? This is where I'm going to stay the rest of my life, so I'll never fall in love again. And singing that with Tracy sitting there in the front row was hard, but it was definitely an honor.
And then you had Dallas Frazier, songwriter, Hall of Famer, who was hosting the service, if you will.
It was daunting.
Breathing down your neck. So.
It was daunting. Yeah, I felt the judging going on the whole time. But that's Nashville in a nutshell, right?
Yeah, absolutely. John Paul White is here if you just joined us. The Hurting Kind is a new album. It's been out a couple of weeks, came out on the 12th, wherever you buy or download music. And he's going to perform live. We'll feature more music from the album when we come back. Live from the Country Music Hall of Fame.
Coffee, country, and Cody.
Now who's ready for some neurological stimulation?
6:50 a.m. WSM.
The Hurting Kind, in the stores, online, wherever you buy or download music. John Paul White guests with Coffee, Country, and Cody. It's our 25th anniversary week of the show. Actually, this Thursday marks 25 years here, and we'll be celebrating in a big way on Friday. I've got an Opry USO tour that we're making a run to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, an overnighter after the Opry tomorrow night, John Paul. We're headed up there to entertain the troops and then come right back home.
Well, take me with you.
Come on.
I've never done any USO stuff.
This is my first one.
Yeah, when I was young, there was a guy that used to take young talent out, and man, I tried so hard to get on one of those tours just to see the world. I thought nobody was ever going to give me a shot in this music business, so I thought that was my one opening, but never done it.
You were born in Muscle Shoals, raised in Loretto, Tennessee.
That's right, which is about 20 miles up the road.
Yeah.
So I've always been there in the Shoals. Yeah, born over in Helen Keller Hospital, actually.
In Tuscumbia?
In Tuscumbia,
yeah.
I don't think most people know about Helen Keller being from there. They just think of the music. And,
right.
But when you grow up there, it's just as boring as anybody's hometown. You think it's lame. And until I got into the business and started leaving town, I found out how much people revered that area, and it gave me a whole different sense of pride. But I just thought everybody played music, and it was tough to get a gig for everybody in every town.
Did you grow up on a chicken farm? Did I read
did.
That somewhere?
I sure did. Middle of nowhere out in Loretta. Yeah. I figured I'd live and die on that chicken farm, too. So, and I miss that old farm, you know, a lot. The more I travel, the more I do. So I wouldn't doubt. I wouldn't bet against me being on a chicken farm again someday.
What time is early call for a chicken farmer? Is it like being a dairy farmer? You got to get up long before the break of day?
No, the type of farm that we had, we didn't have to get up so early. But all my friends would come over and gripe about the chickens waking them up. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Because I don't hear it.
It was white noise to you.
It was white noise, that's right.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
How about that? Well, John Paul, would you play something live? Give us a little setup on this song from the new album, The Hurtin' Kind.
This is a song I wrote with Whisperin' Bill Anderson, and I was terrified that he would.
So
just,
where did you write? Just give me the instances, like in Whisper, because we talked about Bobby Braddock and recording with Leanne. Jamie Johnson's also on here as a writer.
Right.
So where did you and Bill write this?
What we wrote it over at Sony ATV. You know, it was just your classic 9-to-5, punch the clock, let's see if we can write a song kind of thing. And we hit it off really quickly. The first song I wrote, we wrote, was a song called Dead to You, which he cut on his last record. And it's a waltz. And I remember Bill, just as soon as I started the 3-4 thing, he was like, oh, we're going to do a waltz. I was like, is that weird? And he was like, nobody ever wants to write a waltz. This is great. And I thought, oh, we're going to be such good friends. And then there was a loop going on in the room next door, and I'm like, I wanted to beat on the wall and just scream at these people, like, don't you know royalty is next door to you and you're playing a loop through the wall? So eventually this song came.
Okay. All right. Live with John Paul White in the audience. They did not know they were going to get that. These folks who have just checked in here at the tour of the Country Music Hall of Fame and Museum. As I said at the top, this is where your audience walks in on your performance rather than being seated and paying attention.
It's a lot better than them walking away. I've had those gigs, too.
Have you really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Somebody describe that style, that performance style. Obviously, there are always going to be Roy Orbison comparisons, and that doesn't bother you.
It doesn't bother me in the least. I know that I'm not Roy Orbison, and I know that I don't have a classically country voice, or at least not the guys that I consider the classic country singers, but I felt like that's perfect because the juxtaposition between those sonic sensibilities and my voice and my melodies, which are, you know, usually deal in more tension and dissonance and minor keys and stuff, that it creates something brand new, and I'm thrilled with that.
Have you always sung in that voice? Did you sing a different style when you first picked up the guitar and started?
I pretty much sang every style you could think of at some point. I sang, when you grow up on the Tennessee-Alabama state line, you know, it was dry up until the 80s in Alabama, so everybody came up into Tennessee. So when you played, it was a lot of folks that you had to be able to play George Jones or Bad Company or AC/DC, or the Violent Femmes, or, you know, it was just, you had to play it all. You were just a jukebox, and you had to do it just like that. And I loved it, because I'd never written a song. I didn't know who I was. I was whatever turned the girl's head in the corner of the room. Oh, she likes the Eagles? Here we go. I'm going to play it as well as possible.
Here's Tequila Sunrise.
That's right.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3. And it wasn't until college that I started writing songs, and I started realizing what I loved and what I didn't.
That's John Paul White. The Hurting Kind is available wherever you buy or download music, and he's kind enough to get up early and come join us this morning. I was looking at your speaking of Alabama. You're going to be at Big Spring Park in Huntsville, my birthplace, Huntsville, Alabama.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, at the Arts Festival down there, and that is on Sunday, this coming Sunday the 28th.
That's right.
Then you're off to Asheville and Durham in North Carolina, Norfolk, Virginia, and then in Richmond. You've got D.C. dates coming up, so they can follow.
And it doesn't stop. We circle our way back, and then we go West Coast, and then we do Midwest. So over the course of about 3 months, we'll cover the entire country. So wherever you're listening to this, I'm probably coming really close to you, so you have no excuse.
You can run, but you cannot
hide
from John Paul White
to your house.
Tell me about, and we're going to play this one off the record. Charlie Maddox is back at the studio, who said, by the way, he loved your performance opening for Mary Chapin Carpenter. You might want to recall that night in Nashville. I guess that was a Ryman show?
It was a Ryman show, and my band had, none of the members of my band had ever been on that Ryman stage, so I felt kind of like Proud Papa, being up there with him. And it's always chill-inducing anyway, but Mary Chapin is a huge influence for me. I remember being young and hearing You Never Had It So Good the first time I heard that and thinking, whoa, this is different. And radio will play this? And I felt like, oh, I have a shot. Because I didn't sound like a lot of those guys, even though I loved a lot of the songs. And when I heard her, I thought, all right, I've got an angle. I have hope here.
Little did you know that not only that moment, but you'd be writing with Jamie Johnson and Bill Anderson, and it would be on a new album.
And Jamie's another Alabama boy.
Yeah.
Down Montgomery way. And we have known each other for probably 15 years and always said, hey, we should write a song, and never do, which happens. But Bill and I really wanted to get back together, and he had a co-write with Jamie, and so we just made it happen and shoved us all into the same room. And it was magic. Yeah,
you need this album. And if you've been waiting for it, go, oh, I didn't realize it was out. I knew it was coming out. It's been out since the 12th, April the 12th.
That's right.
Is the day that it came out, wherever you buy or download music. And there's been a lot written about you and about the people who have either written with you for this album, mm-hmm. or in the case of Leanne Momack, who sing with you on this album.
Right.
And anybody else we haven't mentioned that you want to give a credit to?
That is a part of the record? I guess not. I mean, I wrote a lot of songs with other folks as well that I think will eventually be an EP or something like that, just honoring all my heroes and just co-writes with the people that influenced me to do what I do. But really, the whole record is me. I deserve most of the credit for the entire record, so we can just leave it there.
Hey, I like it. You can find out more about him in Rolling Stone, and you can find it in the Tennessean, that great article I referenced earlier with Bill Anderson and Bobby Braddock and John Paul. They did a terrific job on that, man.
It was fantastic.
That thing became episodic as it went on. There's video linked to it, and in addition to all the great pictures and the article. By the way, in mentioning your upcoming tour dates over the next couple of weeks, I didn't mention that June 1st, you are making your Opry debut.
I am as a solo artist, I am making my debut.
Correct.
And regardless, even with the Civil Wars, when we did the Opry, it was at the Ryman. So I've never played the Opry House. I've never been in the circle. This will be the first for me. And, of course, my band, it's the first for them. So I'm pretty giddy. I can't wait.
What population of Loretto, Tennessee will be making its way to the Opry House that night? You know, the night that Mike Snyder was inducted, all of Gleason came to the... Yeah, all 300 and some odd.
Oh,
and they made room for them. I think I'm right on that number.
We got him beat. We got about 1,200 total. Yeah. But, yeah, and that's the thing about the Ryman. That's the thing about the Opry is that... they might not come 20 minutes to see me now because they're like, well, I've changed his diapers. I don't need to go. But you play at the Opry House, then they're all they're all paying that ticket price then. Or they're calling me to get on the list, that kind of thing.
And this weekend, Sunday, he'll be in Huntsville, back near his home there, Loretta, Tennessee, Muscle Shoals, his birthplace, Tuscumbia, and then the Opry, June 1st, for his first, as a solo artist, his debut, his first performance at the Big House. At the Grand Ole Opry House in Nashville, Tennessee, which is on the National Register of Historic Places now.
No kidding.
As it should be.
As
right?
it should be.
Yeah.
What took so long?
I know. Because, we've been, everybody talks about the most famous former home. We were at the Belcourt Theater. Yeah. We're at War Memorial, former homes of the Opry. But in 1943, the Opry went to the Ryman and stayed until 1974. We've now been at the new Opry House longer than we were ever at the Ryman Auditorium.
I didn't realize
but
that.
Of course, the 2010 renovation makes it feel different because we had to do everything. We had a do-over after the flood, as you recall.
Oh, I remember that. Yes. I remember that. I was due south of all that, but I was glad I lived in the Shoals, not in Nashville, Tennessee. Another reason. Yeah.
Thank you for coming in this morning.
Man, it's been a hoot. Have me back.
So you know what? You now... in addition to your Grand Ole Opry debut, the first artist to perform on the 25th anniversary week of Coffee Country and Cody.
Wow.
At least give me an asterisk on your resume somewhere, okay?
I will. And I'm realizing that 25 years ago, I met my wife.
Oh, did
you? So I'm imagining you doing your first show as I was driving a forklift at Sam's Club and meeting the hot cashier in the front.
With the radio cranked.
We'll always have that.
You got
we'll
it.
Always have
Thank
that.
You, John Paul. Yeah. John Paul White, Bill Cody. And all my teammates here, Jason Cooper Engineering, Rod Hansen, thank you. To Mike Snowden and Michael Depish with Heartland Television, my thanks. Sean McHugh, Amanda Cannon, Haley Hall, Jay Patrick, our program director. I'm Bill Cody. We'll see you tomorrow. Coffee Country and Cody. Thank you to Charlie Maddox, producing back at the studio this morning.
It's Bill Cody in the morning, 650 AM WSM.
Thanks for listening to our Coffee Country and Cody podcast. Our digital program director is Jay Patrick. Our digital producer is Haley Hall. Marketing and promotions director, Nicole A. Judd. General manager of 650 AM WSM is Chris Kulik. I'm Charlie Matos. We'll see you next time on our Coffee Country and Cody podcast.
Springer Mountain Farms, the purest, best-tasting chicken available. Visit SpringerMTN.com and join the flock for cooking tips, coupons, and great information. Springer Mountain Farms, simply superior chicken, always great care and great taste.